Welcome to a podcast brought to you by the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. Our academy is a national organization committed to excellence in orthopedic manual physical therapy practice, education, and research. And we're here to explore a wide range of topics with you through interviews with content experts.
Greetings, this is Kevin McPherson, and today I will be speaking with Dr. Craig Wassinger. Now, Craig is the author for the article that's titled Pain Knowledge, Attitudes, and Beliefs of Doctor of Physical Therapy Students, Changes Across the Curriculum, and the Role of an Elective Pain Science Course. This article was found in the Journal of Manual and Manipulative Therapy in 2021. And before we get into the interview, let's give you a bit of background on Craig. He entered the profession of physical therapy with his bachelor's degree from Damon College and subsequently went to the University of Pittsburgh, where he received a master's of science and a doctor of philosophy in health and rehabilitation science. Upon completion of his PhD, he underwent postdoctoral research fellowship training with the University of Otago in Dunedin. And then he became an assistant professor with East Tennessee State. Subsequently, he went on to promotion and is now an associate professor for the same institution. He also serves as an adjunct associate professor for both Idaho State University and the University of Cincinnati. For our clinical listeners, Craig has also maintained a presence in the clinic, and he does practice in outpatient for East Tennessee State University physicians and associates. Now, all of these things said, Craig, how are you doing today?
Cool, Kevin. Thanks. First for having me on, and second for letting me chat about something that I'm interested in today. It's a good day in East Tennessee. I was fortunate to get in a mountain bike ride in the beautiful mountains of Johnson City before we had a chance to chat today, and that's always a good thing.
I'd love to say that I went outside and rode my bike today here in Florida, but it is excessively hot and excessively humid, so I'm just going to pretend that I did my cardio through your workout.
All good.
So, Craig, this is a fascinating project. It's one that I hold near and dear to my heart. I'm very interested in pain science, and especially in kind of pushing the knowledge base that we now have in pain science earlier in the exposure of physical therapy practitioners, and specifically in the entry level. So that being said, and without me spilling in the beans, can you give the audience kind of a basic overview of this project and what the outcome was that you came to?
Yeah, for sure. So I think the main idea with this project, it was really kind of an accountability for what I'm teaching within our curriculum. So several years ago, we had a curricular retreat, which I think treat is a misnomer in that context. But we had a curricular retreat, and I kind of outlined and worked with the faculty, my colleagues, on, you know, where is pain covered? How is it covered? And I tied that to, or I attempted to tie that to the IASP criteria, which, as you probably know, but for the listeners, is the International Association for the Study of Pain, whereas they have a curricular guiding document that can be used by physical therapy educators to guide teaching pain to physical therapy students as well as other professions. And so I wanted to look at where that stuff was covered in our curriculum, and then I worked with some faculty to bolster it. And in that time, I decided to create an elective course on pain to try and pull all the things together as well as solidify that information towards the end of our curriculum. And so this project was taking some known existing tools on pain knowledge and pain attitudes and beliefs, and just measuring where our students are at different points in the curriculum to see what they're understanding, to see ways that I can bolster their learning so that they understand more about pain throughout the curriculum that we have here at ETSU.
Excellent. And as far as outcomes of your analysis of your elective, also the outcomes of what you gathered from your co-faculty, what was the take-home?
It was interesting. So I used two tools that are commonly available. One is the NPQ, which is the Neurophysiology of Pain Questionnaire, which it measures, or it reports to measure pain and knowledge. But it was really designed to measure pain knowledge of patients. And so the language that's used is very used it sort of lay terminology. So it may not be super appropriate for our students, but therefore it's really the only thing that's available to measure knowledge, so to speak, that's sort of validated. So I use that. And then I also use the pain attitudes and belief scale for physical therapists, which is known as the PABS-PT. And what I looked at was how do those things change over time? And so I measure the students when they first came into the program, and then every year subsequent. And then I also measured the group of students that took my elective pain course after they took that course to see if there was an effect of the curriculum as well as effect of that specific course. And what I found was, is not surprisingly, you know, they came in with little knowledge and a very biomedical focus of their pain understanding. And then as it aligns with our curriculum delivery, they had a shift toward more understanding of pain, but also a shift toward more behavioral approaches or psychosocial approaches to pain as opposed to the biomedical approach or thought process.
So I found it interesting, correct me if I interpreted the article wrong, but I found it interesting. There seemed to be a pretty substantial shift from year one to year two, maybe not so much year two to three, unless you look at that elective. First, is that correct? Did I interpret that correctly?
Yeah, so the biggest shift was from year one to year two. And then there was a big shift after the pain course for the students that chose to undertake that pain course.
Mm-hmm. So when I look at year one, at least in our curriculum and a few others that I am aware of, that tends to be the anatomy, physiology, basic science portion of the curriculum for many schools. Are you guys that type of curriculum? Are you more case-based curriculum? And how did you see the pain science application being delivered in those really biomedical heavy courses that potentially did continue to shift them towards biomedical or correctedly push them more towards the biopsychosocial?
Yeah, I mean, we do have sort of a basic science preclinical first year that then shifts into more clinical coursework later, like a lot of programs do. One of the things, and I agree with your kind of assumption that that could kind of reinforce or promote sort of a biomedical approach. But one of the things that I did is I kind of worked with our faculty in the neurophysiology course, for example. So of course they're learning about nociception and pain as well as all the other anatomy that I don't remember from PT school. I just gave a lecture on pain, really giving a very introductory overview of the biopsychosocial model with a lot of simple, understandable, relevant examples and getting into pain neuromatrix theory and other psychosocial models to help them really contextualize pain as a physiologic process with lots of other factors that play into it. And that kind of was reinforced within our musculoskeletal course series, which even though it's a clinical course, that's our early clinical course. And so they've had that at that time. And we talk through yellow flag screening. We talk through different pain types and how we address different impairments of our patients, whether they be biological, whether they be psychological, and we treat them differently. And so I think that while biomedical beliefs could be reinforced, the way that we organized the curriculum and the content that was included from the ISP guiding document kind of shifted our students away from that, which I was excited to see, but I didn't really know if that was going to hold up based on all of the background information that most students come in with, which is heavily biomedically focused.
That's very interesting. So Craig, with the flavor that I'm getting out of your description of your curriculum, as well as just your place within the East Tennessee State University program, you seem to be kind of the guiding force with the pain science component of it. Was there any training or any development that you did for faculty members that maybe their world is not so much that pain? Cardiopulmonary specialist would be kind of the first group that I would think of maybe needing a little bit extra info.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this was self-directed based on my interest in pain, but essentially the way that I built it into other courses is I said, you know, where do you cover pain within your course, whether it's clinical, whether it's preclinical, regardless of the structure of the course, how is pain covered? And then I kind of took two different routes. I either worked with the faculty to kind of get them maybe more comfortable or updated with newer models of pain. Or I worked with them and they said, you know what, Craig, this seems like something I'm not really comfortable with. Can you manage it? And so within the neuroscience class, it was an easy fit for me to come in and talk a little bit about nociception, but then give a bigger picture. Whereas like within our modalities course, for example, I did some updated things, but I handed that back off to the existing faculty member. So it was kind of a combination of trying to bolster the whole curriculum in working with my colleagues here.
So how long was this process? Was it a single year, or is this something that you had to kind of do your first retreat or treat, then from there kind of do 1 year of let's work on this aspect of the curriculum or these courses and then move on? How quickly was this shift?
Well, I mean, I don't like to time it because I can't count that slowly. It took a while. And as you understand, things in academia don't change very quickly, as well as the other folks listening that might be involved in some capacity or remember back to your student days. So it was a while. I would say that I started lecturing on specific pain science related content, maybe 2014-ish. And then my course was, I think, fully developed as an elective on the books in 2017, I would say. So, you know, it probably took 3 or 4 years to kind of pull all the strings together till it got to where it is. And then since then, it's been more minor tweaks than it's been sort of bigger changes.
I will agree with you. That actually sounded like a very rapid turnaround in the academic system. So now, if we look at a little bit more minutia, what did your elective look like for the students? What was the day-to-day function? What did you assess them on? What were the learning activities?
Yeah, so the fun part about the elective course for me is that we don't have any required electives, which sounds a little bit confusing, but you know, some programs say you have to take an elective course and here are a bunch of options. You know, when I created this elective course, it was all on the student's volition to learn more, but not required within their graduation curricular load. So the students that take the course are willing to put in the extra time, effort, and then tuition monies to learn about something. So I felt a little bit of responsibility to make it one, more fun, but also two, really relevant to what they're going to be doing in the clinic. So the course is really centered around clinical application of principles centered around pain that they've had a little bit of in the past, but then we're solidifying within the beginning of the course. So the course is taught basically within a block during the first month of the semester. And then the rest of the semester, they have a long internship. And so we spend the time, it's a flipped classroom model. So they've got some pre-recorded lectures and the majority of our time together is spent on lab activities, case-based application, tying things together, discussing it, and then applying sort of pain principles to non-pain patients to try and get them to think about things differently. So my favorite, I guess I have two main assignments that I really like from the course that I tie out over the rest of the semester while they're on the clinic. And one of those is I have them work on educating patients, loved ones who don't really understand pain, classmates who don't understand pain, or clinical instructors that don't understand pain on sort of the basic ideas of pain science. So I'm trying to get them to advocate for a different perspective within their communities, whether that's their social community or whether that's their professional community. And then they have a reflection kind of around that assignment. And then the second assignment, which I really like, is I give them the day one of the semester, I give them a pretty complex patient case of a patient with chronic pain. And I ask them to kind of go through the whole plan of care. You know, how are you going to examine this patient? What outcome measures are you going to use? What's your intervention going to look like? What's your day one treatment going to look like? And then their last assignment is reflecting on that after all the information they've had from the course and updating that plan of care to kind of integrate the information that we've covered within the course that also could hopefully tie into what they're doing in the clinic. So it's trying to make it really clinically relevant, but hopefully applicable for the patients that they're going to be seeing out in the real world.
Those sound like really exciting methods for teaching this content. The first thing that comes to mind as an academic in the teaching field would be more, how big is your cohort? I just imagine that being a lot of grading.
It is a lot of grading. So our cohort is about 40 students a year. And over the past, I guess, 4 or 5 iterations of this course, more than half of the students every year have taken this on top of their regular workload. So it's usually 18 to 25 students in the class.
Okay. Now, how do you feel that it being elective, they paying more, they obviously have some interest in this elective. How do you feel that that might have impacted your measurements, your PABS PT and your MPQ numbers?
Yeah, so this is a limitation of the way the study was designed. And essentially, I had collected all of the information from the third year group, which the elective was covered in the third year, basically immediately prior to the pain course. And then I collected the same information again right after the pain course, but only from the group that took that elective. So within the mix of third year students at baseline, if they had an interest in here, they may have had higher scores to begin with, and that may not have been shown as a change score after the elective course, but it could have been their baseline. But I didn't have that information to really determine how effective the course would be. But that being said, there was a significant shift towards sort of behavioral approaches after the pain course, as well as increased knowledge. So I'm going to claim that it's for my course, but it certainly may not have been.
I think I do that quite frequently on all of my courses, not just musculoskeletal-based ones. So I'm going to step back a little bit to something that you said. It was in response to, or your response included the first assignment where they have to go out and they have to educate somebody. One of the examples you gave was a clinical instructor. What has been the reception or the feedback from the students and the clinical instructors who this student chose to provide the updated pain science information to?
Yeah, I think overall it's been positive. I mean, oftentimes the students I will come to me and they're kind of nervous as they're preparing for their sort of lunch-in service that most students have to give as part of their clinicals. And so we kind of talk down because they want to give the whole course, in a 30-minute presentation. I was like, well, let's just talk about, what do you think is most appropriate for the patients that you see, and what examples can you tie into that you're treating clinically that you could then describe to the group of colleagues that you're going to be presenting this to. And overwhelmingly, it comes back to like the clinical instructors wish they had more resources and more information that's new coming out like this because, they're a partner of our educational process and we're relying on them to train them clinically, but also maybe this is a way to help give them some additional information and feedback about what's sort of new and upcoming in the world of rehab and things that they can learn to bring into their clinical practice.
That's really nice to see it when the clinical instructors and our clinical faculty are on board, supportive, and they really just want to soak up a lot of the information that we're providing to the students. And I too wish that there were more mechanisms by which we as institutions could provide that. Because one of my other questions was looking at the timing of the elective and all of the clinical placements or experiences that they have at East Tennessee State. Can you just give us a rundown of what happens after this course from a curriculum standpoint?
Sure. So they come to this course. I said it's the first semester of their third year. The last semester of their second year, which is the semester immediately preceding the elective, is their first longer internship. And I want to say that's like 10 weeks. So then they're with me and a couple other courses for a month. And then they have their second long internship, which is maybe 12 weeks. Then they have their final summer semester, which is didactic. And then they have their last semester, which is a 15-week full-time internship. So they're a third of their way through their longer internships throughout our curriculum.
Okay. Do you think that there would be any shift? Because if I remember, there was not an end of curriculum measurement. Do you feel there would be any potential shifting that occurs as a result of what the students here experience on those last clinicals compared to what they may have learned earlier in the curriculum and in their first quote unquote associated clinical experience with the elective and the curricular model?
Yeah, I definitely think that there would be a shift that you could see. I feel like it may not, I think it might be buried within statistics, but I think if you looked at individuals, you could see shifts based on their clinical placement and how their clinics that they're practicing under operate and treat clinically. So to tie into that, within my example of the assignment that I give where the students kind of rework the case that they started the semester with, hopefully integrating the pain science concepts, I often see a strong influence of the clinical practice that they're working in and the clinical instructor's sort of approach to clinical practice reflected in the way that they modify the patient's plan of care, maybe not the way that I would hope that it would have been reflected based on the way that we covered the course. So I see a strong influence on the way that that assignment rolls out, and I think that they will impact them moving forward as well.
That's something that I'm interested in more from just my experience with practice, in which our curriculum is very much evidence-based. We're very, I'd even call us modular, in that some of our coursework is very case-based, progression-based, introducing information at a case level for multi-systems. But a lot of it is, you know, this is your pure MSK thread. This is your pure set of courses for neuro. So what I see on the back end after our full-time clinicals and our students come back for their final 8 weeks, which are done on campus, or at least more from a didactic standpoint, is a lot of the things that we taught, a lot of the things that we went through that have evidence behind them tend to disappear in some cases. And it is seems to be very strongly associated with the clinician's beliefs. And as a result of that, I always wondered what would happen from the pain science standpoint, the practice standpoint. So I think that's an open question that would be very interesting to find the answer to. So you mentioned right before I got a little long-winded there, what you thought you might see would be in connection or changes at the individual level based off the clinical placement that student had. You do mention that you didn't link change scores at the individual level. What was the reasoning behind not connecting each of the students to their subsequent follow-up assessments?
Yeah, that's a good question. And it's kind of got, I don't know, maybe an interesting answer depending on where you come from. So my intention in developing this project was to do it as a one-off, like 1 year, just take a look at this, modify the curriculum based as needed, maybe get, you know, a presentation or publication out of it, depending on what the numbers kind of looked like. And then, as often happens in all of our lives, things got busy. I didn't really have time to take even look at the data, let alone analyze it and try to do anything with it. And so a year kind of passed, and I was coming up to another cohort of students, another pain elective class. And so I was like, well, since I'm not able to do anything with this now, I wonder if I can increase my sample size by collecting a second year's worth of data. So I contacted the IRB, did a little modification, extended the time period, extended the numbers, and then I collected a second group of data. So my intention was never to have it be sort of a longitudinal following of individuals. It just happened to be that because of maybe my laziness or my busyness, I didn't get a chance to do it. And so I just decided to increase the sample size and collect more information.
I'm going to say that was probably your busyness versus your laziness. That way I can reflect a little bit more kindly on my career and other things that have run into my way. So Craig, this specific research is very interesting to me, very, very cool. I really like the direction it's going, especially in light of the recent pushes and petitions to try to force pain science to be a core portion of physical therapy training. But what else might you be working on? Are there other projects that our listeners should be listening for that you have in the works?
Yeah, you know, there's lots of things going on from a pain education perspective. I'm doing some cool things that I'm excited about. I think the first one I want to give, I guess, a plug more than anything, and this isn't necessarily research related, but I've been working with some folks. So I'm involved in the pain special interest group. I'm the practice committee chair. And as you may be aware, that's tied into the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy of the APTA. And over the past probably 18 months, if I'm going to put a number on it, time gets confusing when you're an academic. But we've been working on creating a pain education manual. So Mark Shepard has led this this group sponsored by the AOPT to basically take the International Association for Study of Pain's curricular guidelines for physical therapists and put some more substance to it. So we created learning objectives, we created sample assignments, we included sample syllabi, so that educators have a resource if they want to incorporate this within their curriculum. We've basically created the handbook on how to do that. And that will be included And it's just been accepted as a pre-conference course for CSM for next year. So, you know, we're trying to do like a train the trainer things and give out as many resources as we have available to try and bolster pain education for all PT programs.
Now that sounds fascinating. And in knowing Mark Shepard, I expect that to be an outstanding product that you guys are making. So I am certain that there will be a lot of listeners who are going to keep their eyes out for that and sign up for that pre-conference course. So that being said, Craig, I really want to thank you for your time today with the interview. And if we do have some interested listeners that may want to reach out to you, what might be a good way for them to get a contact with you before we close out the interview?
Yeah, I think the best way to reach out to me would just, you can get me on Twitter, which is at Craig underscore Wassinger. So that's C-R-A-I-G underscore W-A-S-S-I-N-G-E-R.
Fantastic. And I'm sure we'll have some that are reaching out to you. So Craig, again, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for all that you do for the profession, especially when it comes to a sensitive yet very important topic such as this one.
Cool. You're welcome. Glad to be here. And thanks for having me.
This has been a production of the American Academy of Orthopedic Manual Physical Therapists. You can learn more about the Academy by visiting our website at aaompt.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram by searching for our acronym, AAOMPT. The views and opinions expressed on the AOMPT podcast are those of the interviewers and interviewees and do not represent the official position of AOMPT. The information presented should not be used as personal health care or clinical practice advice. If you need to find an expert orthopedic physical therapist near you, then check out the Find a Fellow feature under the Public Resources tab at www.aaompt.org, which you can find in the show notes.